everyone. This is Matt, and welcome to our podcast series, Takeouts, with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better nutrition simplified in the new food economy. Today we have special guest Leah Segedi on the show. Leah is the founder of Mamovation and a huge food activist. Leah was named Mum of the Year by Shape magazine and has had her work featured on CNN, NBC and the O'Reilly Factor. Today Leah talks politics, her weight issues, and how her desire to shed the pounds led to her crusade to help others, and how she strives to use her community to educate people on food awareness. Right, let's get this show on the road. Over to you, ladies.
Hi, this is Robin O'Brien and Ashley Coff, and we are thrilled to be back with you guys today. We have had so much fun introducing our first few guests, but today's guest is such an incredible game changer. And Ashley and I were talking about this recently, how important this movement is because it does require all hands on deck. And when it comes to something as enormous as cleaning up our food supply, none of us can do everything, but all of us can do something. And something that we love doing together because our skills are so complementary is really finding and engaging with people who have different complementary skill sets. And our guest today, Leah Segedi, is definitely in that camp. Her background is fascinating. You know, today, if you were to know her today, you would know her as a leading voice in the food movement, especially among moms. She is a mother of three gorgeous redheaded boys, and she and her husband together have created an enormous platform to really help activate and galvanize and support a lot of women that are coming into this movement. But prior to that, prior to motherhood, prior to any of this, she has a really powerful story that's kind of in and of her own right. And I think, you know, because we have so much to cover with you, Leah, we're just going to jump right in, if that's okay with you. So today I would love for you to just, you know, go back a little bit. You know, I know who you are today, and we're going to get to that piece, but I want people to know where you started so that they can see how far you've come and with how much grace you've been able to do that.
Thanks so much, Ashley and Robin. I really appreciate being on the show, and thanks to everyone who's listening to my story. Well, I mean, I guess you really can take things back about 10 years ago. And about 10 years ago, oh boy, I was a size 22, almost in a size 24 pants. I was so big, I wouldn't have been able to fit in the theater seat. My husband and I loved going to the movies, and I didn't fit in the seat. I had to kind of sit to the side because I was actually, my hips were so big and my stomach was so big. I never flied because I would have to have purchased a second seat. And I was so large that I was embarrassed to leave my house. And so I really never left the house. And I was the one who was always taking the pictures because I never wanted a picture taken of me, because anytime I would see myself, I was so ashamed. And that's where I was 10 years ago, dejected, sad, depressed, very, very overweight, and just really, really, really unhappy. And one of the best things that ever happened to me was becoming a mom. And that was because, you know, I was never able to lose weight on my own. It took something special in me to lose the weight, because when I looked into the eyes of my child, I thought to myself, what kind of a mom do I want to be, and what do I want for this child? And the one thing that screamed more than anything else was, I want this child to be happy. I want this child to be unburdened by the things that I had to deal with day to day. And I knew in my heart that the only way to provide that kind of future for that child was to change my life right then and there. And so it started off just as me literally walking around the block, because I have a hip condition called hip dysplasia. And when you get really big, it becomes really uncomfortable and painful to walk. So I was not getting a lot of activity. And it literally was just me walking around the block and just cutting out things like soda and McDonald's fast food. And that was literally how I started. And you know, I lost over 100 pounds in 2 years. I did it the old-fashioned way, diet and exercise. I watched what I ate. I got a lot of activity. And then I started up a community, because in my background, not a lot of people know this about me, but you know, I have a master's degree from the University of Southern California. I graduated on stage, top of my class. I went into marketing and PR and politics right away. I'm highly intelligent. I do all these things. I'm a professional. And when I was staying at home with my child, even though that was really fulfilling for me, I needed something else. You know, my brain just goes a mile a minute. And I needed to do something else. So I started up an online community, and it started as just a hobby. And the focus of the community was for women who wanted to learn about fitness and wanted to lose weight and just wanted to be healthier. And because of my weight loss and my story, I was written up in all kinds of magazines, from Shape Magazine, Fitness Magazine, Ladies Home Journal. And the site just really took off because it was about moms role modeling behavior for their kids. And it was how we could do that. And over the years, that grew and grew and grew and blossomed. And we had this humongous community. And I got written up in Sison Media as one of the top 10 mom bloggers in the United States. They ranked me as 4. I was jumping up and down thinking, oh my gosh. It was awesome. And then spent years helping moms lose weight. And we, through the group and the campaigns we did, assisted moms in losing over 3,500 pounds. That's a huge amount of weight that we helped with. And we didn't do it all ourselves. It was helping moms role model behavior. It was just like that idea of becoming that mother lion, you know, reaching into that part of you that is about everybody else and supporting everybody else and helping your children and your family. And it's just not about you, it's about them, and reaching into that mother lion of them and creating change through that, which is exactly what I did. And so we assisted with that. And then what happened is, you know, after we did the 3,500 pounds and helping moms lose all that weight and the amazingness that came from that and the community and the love, I had my third baby. And I was really busy, but yes, I had a third. And this kid was like incredible with the breastfeeding. He would breastfeed all the time. I basically never was able to get off the couch. And so at that point in time, I had a lot of time to do some reading, which prior to that, I was too busy to do. And I saw in the newspaper, and I live in California, that Prop 37 had made the ballot, and what that was labeling GMOs. And prior to that, I really had no idea what that was. But I knew that I would get every question about it, because now that it's hit the newspaper and it's actually something that people are going to vote on, it's going to become a news platform and there's going to be a lot of questions about it. So I started digging into, you know, what it was. I didn't know what it was. And one of the first things that I came across was Robin's TED Talk, your TED Talk, Robin. And I know we've talked about this before, but this was an issue that I never took seriously before. And the reason I hadn't taken it seriously is it was all about the messengers. The messengers that were bringing this information to me were just not people that I was listening to. And that's typically what happens with a lot of information, with a lot of messages. You know, it's all about the messenger. It's not about what's said. In order to be effective in communicating things, you have to be solid with who's doing the communicating. And up until that point, all I had heard from was what I would call green hippies, you know. And I grew up in a conservative household, just like Robin had. She is in Texas. I'm from California. But the families were very similar. And those were people we just didn't take seriously, or at least I didn't take seriously. Until that moment.
I want to stop you for a little bit, because weren't you, I mean, I know we've both spoken to how we, you know, were raised kind of under these conservative roofs, but weren't you even engaged politically?
Yes.
Wasn't it part of your job prior to having kids?
Yes. Oh, God. Some people don't even know this about me.
Oh, my God. Robin told me that, Leah.
Yeah.
And I was like, because when I met you at your house, it was like, you know, I came in and it was like totally like you had the baby on the boob and you're like, I'm dealing with all, you know, all these others. And I knew the whole weight loss thing. And she literally like just an hour ago was like, oh, my gosh, I think she was doing like Republican,
yeah,
you know, outreach or whatever. Okay, spill.
Absolutely.
It. We got to,
yeah,
hear. Yeah.
My first jobs outside of college, in college, I started working for the mayor of Los Angeles, Richard Reardon, who I absolutely adored. He was a moderate Republican. and got into things right there. And then after about a year, I started working for the California Republican Party. You get that? I worked for the party in California, doing all kinds of stuff. And, you know, went on from there to work for the Assembly, California State Assembly. I worked with one moderate Republican and then later for a very conservative Republican. And then after that, I did fundraising. So very, very much hooked into Republicans and what they were doing. The interesting thing, though, about me is because I was a moderate, I would cross lines, you know. And the funny thing is, when I was working for the more conservative Republican, they sent me into the Democratic den because I was the one that was more of the like bridge builder. You know, I didn't want to sit here and complain about what our differences were. I was more about talking about what our similarities were, and that's kind of how my personality is. But absolutely, I did fundraising for the Republicans, and you know, people that knew me back then and they see what I'm doing now, they shake their heads and they're like, how is this even possible? But it's possible because I learned things that I could not unlearn, you know, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, the environment and, you know, health and safety and what's in our food and, you know, what is in our personal care products. And this information really changed my life because I no longer saw it as, you know, black and white as jobs and commerce and you know, promoting the American way. I saw it as, wait a minute, how could the American way be harming people? That's not okay. This isn't what we're
and I
about.
Think, you know, one of the things that I do a lot of speaking to Republican audiences, and and I can understand sort of the hurdles that you can put up because I did. I put them up. Is that, you know, when you think about it, the most conservative thing that anyone could be doing is protecting their health.
Right. Right.
And the greatest way to take personal responsibility, which is such a Republican platform, the greatest way to take personal responsibility is to know what's in the food and how it's being made and how it's being produced. And so to me, you know, I thought, again, you know, you're right. I mean, that was, there wasn't that messenger. And I think I was so terrified to tell that part of my story initially. You know, I thought I'm just going to be, you know, I was just terrified. It felt really personal. And, you know, I felt like here I had, you know, had one entire belief system and now I was shifting to something totally different and where people are going to say that was hypocritical. But, you know, change at its core has some hypocrisy in it. It's the only way to create change is to pivot from one thing to the other. So, you know, I think what I saw early on in my work was that if I had the courage to do something, others would have the courage to do the same. And what's fascinating to me right now, and I think it's a huge push of mine, and I would love to do something with you, Leah, on this, is pushing this. You know, we've just had a group start, Plate of the Union, and, you know, saying this needs to be front and center for the presidential election for 2016. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, if we're going to be talking about healthcare, we got to be talking about food.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, we're starting to really
and
have
even
the conversation.
Defense. You know, I mean, being here in D.C. now, and I, you know, definitely pay a lot of attention to our Defense Department and, excuse me, veterans and military. Like, you know, we can give the whole thing of, like, we don't have enough people going into the military because of obesity, but we know that it's not just about the weight. You know, when I look at, you know, even the problems with the police, you know, that we have, whether it's police department and local community relationships or something, you know, internal, external, like our military, you know, we all know the power of how good food can make you feel healthier and the converse. And so I think, Leah, you have this particularly fascinating space because it wasn't your political inclination that had you go, you know, you didn't learn things politically that had you say, I'm going to switch. And quite honestly, I mean, following down this path of the healthcare side of it, I think is just so fascinating to look at, you know, as you lost weight and really gained your health and what your impetus was to take care of your family. As Robin was saying, these are some of the most conservative core values, you know, that any of us could have. And it's why this can't be a political football, to quote Robin, you know, as she said before.
Well, the food movement isn't really, I mean, it's apolitical. That's how I see it. Because if you look at my community, it's about 60-40. There's a lot. There's conservatives and there's, you know, the conservatives and liberals. And they all survive together in the middle in the food movement because we all eat. And that's the point. And, you know, my very core where Momovation is, we try not to pick sides, Republican or Democrat, because again, I'm moderate, so it's kind of like everyone could be mad at me for some reason or another, you know, but I don't agree with everything. I don't agree with Republicans. I don't agree with the Democrats. I'm kind of really in the middle, you know, and
yeah, you know, I think there are probably a lot of people that feel that way. I mean, that, you know, I talk about systems. I'm a systems thinker. And so I look at, you know, it's obviously got a problem with our food system kind of from start to finish. You've got a company like Monsanto laying off 2,600 people, and you've got a company like Whole Foods laying off 1,500. We've got a problem with our food system. It's not working really for anybody right now, so it needs reboot. Same thing can be said about our political system. You know, if we were to start over with a political system today, would we have a two-party system? Probably not, and we certainly wouldn't define them the way they're defined right now. We sort of have inherited these parties from our grandparents' age, really, if you think about it. So, you know, again, it provides for a really open dialogue, and I am 100% with you. It's why I always say this is a patriotic thing. It's a universal thing. It's a love thing. It's a human rights thing. You know, this fundamental desire that we have to protect the people that we love. And I think social media has completely changed the game. And again, it's where your work is something that I think is fascinating to highlight, because you were slightly ahead of the curve, and you came in through kind of the weight loss door, whereas, you know, mine, I came in through the food allergy door. But as we all know, you don't stop learning. You do not stop learning, and it's a lifelong process. And I think, you know, as a country, we're waking up to the fact that we were more or less food illiterate. And so just as you would have like a classroom full of kindergartners who are learning how to read and learning the alphabet and learning to put words together, we're kind of doing that as a country with the food. And just as you'd have that same classroom of kids progressing at kind of different speeds and rates, and some are going to jump and some are going to be a little slow, same thing here. And I think that's why it's so important that we have a lot of different messengers and a lot of different vehicles, because, yeah, maybe some people are going to be able to hear it from me, but maybe somebody else needs to hear it from the registered dietitian, or somebody else wants to hear it from the MD, or somebody else wants to hear it, you know, from somebody inside the industry. And I think to really honor that, you know, that we all play these really critical roles, and that it's together that, you know, we can create this change. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit, you know, as you shifted your community from weight loss to this kind of food awareness, that it wasn't just about calorie in, calorie out. You know, how did that go?
Well, it was interesting, because some people were very disappointed, and some people were like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? It was like it was a really interesting reaction. And also in the industry, because, you know, I'm a mom blogger, and all of the mom bloggers, they're all my friends, the ones that are, you know, out there and on TV and here and there. And they had the same reaction to me as well. Some of them were like, yes, this is awesome. And other people are like, whoa, this is not cool. And they walked away. And so I think what I had to do is, you know, I always base things on where I feel I need to go based on the mission and where my focus is. And I knew walking into this that not everyone was going to agree with me, not everyone was going to like me, and not everyone was going to, you know, just go along with it. And I said to myself, you know, that's okay, because, you know, you've got to have someone out there saying it. And, you know, I feel in my heart, I'm one of those people that if I see something wrong and I know that I can do something, if I don't do that thing, I will feel awful for the rest of my life. And at the end of the day, what I tell people is really it's all about my sleep. if I'm losing sleep, I know I'm not doing the right thing, and I'm just really selfish. I just want to sleep at night. So I do these things that are crazy sometimes because I value my sleep. And it's really about me just having to honor who I am and honor, you know, things that I think are right. And it doesn't matter if people agree with me or not. What matters is that I do what needs to be done so that I can look back at the end of my life and say, I did okay. And, you know, I did everything I was given to, and all the gifts that I was given, you know, I use those appropriately. And that's really important to me. And so with the food movement, at that point in time, you know, when I learned about GMOs, I had this huge network of bloggers, you know, over 9,500 bloggers at the time. And I knew that nobody in the mom blogging world, other than the green bloggers, were talking about this. And I understood that at this point in time, I had an opportunity to really, really, really push the envelope here. And I organized about 650 bloggers across the United States and Canada just to ask do you have a right to know? Do you want to know? And most of the bloggers that we were organizing, I would say about 70% of them were not green bloggers at all. They were just mom bloggers. And they didn't even have a understanding of what a GMO was. They just were like, the technology of my food has changed that dramatically. Hell yeah, I want to know about it. And I want everyone else to be able to know about it. This isn't fair. I didn't consent to this. Why is this being hidden? And I think as mothers, we all had that same instinctual response. Like, no, this is not okay. We need to have this out in the open. This needs to be transparent. And that's pretty consistent with everybody when you do polling. Everyone feels the same. No one wants things hidden from them. And when it's hidden from you, you're just like, what is going on here? And the interesting thing that happened was when we lost in California, everybody was really sad. But what actually happened was it just kind of created this fervor where people were mad and even more upset about it. And they wanted it. They really wanted it even more. And so when all these biotech companies and food companies tried to squash the initiative, what they actually did was gave it a bigger platform, which I thought was really ironic. But I kind of had an understanding that that's what was going to happen because I've been working in politics for so long. I would say, look, this isn't the end. Trust me. I know it. It's not the end. I've been in so many campaigns where they lost and then they came back, you know, and came back even bigger and fuller and more people cared. So,
I 100% agree with that. I mean, those state labeling initiatives, if I were the CEO of any company, I would say, that's crazy. There's no way I want to do this patchwork state by state by state.
Yeah.
But what those state labeling initiatives did was it brought an awareness, you know, it brought a literacy around this topic to people in these individual states, and suddenly it was front page news and it was on your nightly news, and you know, people that had never even heard of a GMO were hearing about a GMO, and it created an awareness. And I think as those state initiatives took off, it created this pressure for a national labeling program. And I
right.
think that will ultimately be what we will be able to say, you know, was accomplished from the state labeling initiatives. I think what's fascinating right now is that, you know, inside these big companies, these huge big companies, you know, whether they're acquiring Enjoy Life Foods, which is an allergen-friendly company that's, you know, non-GMO, or Annie's, the acquisition there by General Mills. I mean, that was $820 million, or Hormel with Applegate. Mm-hmm. You know, what's happening is you've got people now at senior positions inside these companies who are just like us.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, you know, I've had conversations with a lot of these people, and they're like, you know, Robin, my wife is just like you. And so at what point, and I think it's coming pretty darn soon, can we see these guys start to say, you know what, we've got to break up with the chemical companies so that we don't have to break up with our consumer?
And I think, like, and adding on that, and I was just having this conversation with someone from Nyman Ranch who, you know, was bought by Purdue, is one of the things, too, I think, Leah, that you've done, you know, I've been at both ShipCons and at other things that you've organized, is there's always a, and Robin, you do an amazing job of this as well, but there's always this sense that you're not creating a mean girl environment, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked about it. I think Rob and I were talking about it the other day, and we're like, you know, with anyone that works at Monsanto, I mean, at the core, I get so upset that their day job maybe has to promote glyphosate, right? For example, and they may know people who have cancer, and it's like, what am I doing? But the reality is if I met them in any other situation, I guarantee that most of them I would be friends with. And so one of the things I'm curious about is, you know, whether it's at the conferences or as you've done this outreach, and, you know, I know you get asked this a lot, even because I've heard people ask it at your conference, how do you handle the haters? You know, how do you love the haters, or creating an environment where this movement doesn't feel like it's one group of mean girls against the other?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, it's that idea that you focus on, I like to say there's all kinds of shades of green. There's like a deep green and there's a light green. And there's, everybody's acceptable and everybody is loved and everybody has a purpose. And so what we do in my community is we control my space really well. And I control the temperature of my space. The temperature of my space is the most important thing to me because, you know, a lot of people that are there listening and watching, they are learning and they don't know a lot. They don't know a lot to be able to come in and debate and scream and yell and do all that stuff. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the platforms that have the screaming and yelling, those are kind of people that are a little more deep into things. And we're more of a light space. And so it's more about fuzziness and, you know, here's the information, share it, you know, and learn from it. And so I monitor a lot of what's happening. So if we have people coming in that are, you know, being mean to me or mean to my people around me, you know, they get the boot right away. Mm-hmm. I just don't tolerate them, you know, bringing down the vibe. And it's really important to me. And for me, holding and managing communities, online communities, for as long as I have, one bad apple is very easily spoiling the bunch, because it just kind of creates this, you know, this issue with everyone. It kind of infects everything. And so I'm very, very particular about that. And we just have to monitor it daily, you know, and as best I can. And sometimes I miss things, you know, but, you know, most of the time I'm in there, you know, fixing things. Now, the other thing is I never, ever, ever come down on people personally, like at a personal level. Like if there's someone out there, you know, it's very unlikely that I will attack a person. Now, if we're talking about a company doing something wrong, that's totally different. I will come down on a company, but I won't. I'm very unlikely, not saying it hasn't happened before, but I'm saying it's very unlikely for me to come down on a person. And that's because I agree with Robin. There are people, there's thousands and thousands of people that work at Monsanto and work at, you know, these big food companies that are wonderful, wonderful people. And I used to be one of those people. And so I have to remember,
that's a great,
you know,
point.
That
yeah.
I changed, they can change, but they're never going to change if people come at them with hate. You have to come at them with a heart of love for someone to change. It doesn't work with, you know, people yelling and screaming at you. And so I just remember that. And I think, you know, the other thing is some people don't know about me. Like one of my closest friends, her husband works for Monsanto.
Wow.
and so at a very basic level, I have someone in my life where our kids, our 3-year-olds, are like best friends. We are very close, very, very close. And we spend like every Tuesday and Thursday together talking. And, you know, so even to that level, like I have empathy in my heart and compassion for her. Now, her husband isn't selling genetically modified seeds. He's selling other things that have nothing to do with that. But he still works for Monsanto. There's thousands and thousands of people just like that, that are just like everybody else. And, you know, I have to remember, again, it goes back to me changing. I changed, but I did not change based on people yelling at me. I didn't change on people calling me a monster. I didn't change because of that. I changed because there were people in my life that, you know, kind of planted a seed, and little by little I got myself ready. And then when I heard Robin, that was the home run. And so, I mean, that's really what it's about for me. And so some people, when they meet me in person, they're like, wow, you're so nice. You know what I mean? Because some of the things that we talk about on my platform are not, you know, not nice things. We're talking about glyphosate. We're talking about, you know, different things that cause cancer. And it's a, you know, those are strong words to say, you know, and then when they meet me in person, you know, it's like, I'm really non-judgmental of what you feed your children. I don't feel that way about you. People think I'm more judgmental than I am. I'm not, because 10 years ago, you remember who I was 10 years ago. And because I have that part of me where, you know, I was at McDonald's every day. I was doing this. I was doing that. You know, and I was as unhealthy as I was. How could I hate myself back then? I don't hate myself back then. Therefore, I don't hate you, and I don't hate what you do. I just feel like, you know, bringing this information in a loving manner helps people more than it does, you know, throwing daggers at them.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I was just telling Ashley, I was having a conversation with somebody who has been in the organic industry for a very, very long time. He's somebody I respect enormously, and he's very focused on sort of seed and soil work right now and how we clean up the soil. And, you know, he made a comment the other day about how Monsanto is doing amazing work in technology in that particular space. And he kind of said, now what? You know, and I think again, like if we started over, what would it look like? You know, that company has evolved over 100 years through a ton of chemicals. And as we know, there are good people inside. You know, I think the problem we have right now is that the arrogance that was wrapped around thinking that people wouldn't want to know about such a fundamental change in the way that our food is produced. And just listening to you, and I think about, you know, some of the outreach that I've seen across social media, just recently, especially with the kind of the cyberbullying that can happen. And there was a woman, a mom, who reached out, and it turned out that she had worked at Monsanto. And, you know, you can imagine they get it all too. Mm-hmm. And she was willing to elevate the conversation. And as we did that, you know, it was fascinating to see how that was received among the community, you know, farmers and scientists on both sides and mothers on both sides, you know, and all of a sudden I realized people are so ready to elevate this conversation. And to me, I get back to that one issue of, I think labels would be the fastest way to solve that problem. You know, that again, if Monsanto believes in those products so much, just label them. You know, Intel is so proud to label Intel Inside when it comes to their products.
Right.
And then, you know, then the science speaks for itself. And then guess what? We can conduct more science because suddenly we've got labels and accountability and traceability, you know? And I thought, you know, what if we were to bring together a forum of parents or a forum, you know, of farmers, and we could take this vitriol out of it and just have that conversation in a space.
But we still couldn't conduct more studies, right? Because they would have to, you still have, because they have the patent situation, you would still have to have Monsanto be the supporter of the study, or at least give the permission, right? A label
wouldn't
necessarily allow
that. Yeah, they would insist on permission,
that.
But I think at
right.
that point, if you've got food that's labeled, you know, for example, a friend had a reaction to organic spinach because of the E. coli, but she was able to say it was organic spinach. And I
right.
thought, you know, moms want that same ability to say, you know what, my kid had a reaction.
Yes.
Was it the genetically engineered corn?
Right.
I mean, that's all they want is that same ability for, you know, because that one woman was able to say it was the organic spinach. And I think the mothers are wanting to say, I want to know if it was the genetically engineered thing, but
right.
but they're blind. They have been that has just been totally taken away from them. And I think what's fascinating right now, and Leah, I know you've received it, I've received it, I'm sure Ashley's had some too, where it's just like that vitriol that can come out, you know, on both sides. I mean, both sides do it. And to really, you know, step back and say, this isn't how we're raising our kids. We wouldn't
right.
we wouldn't tolerate a friend or a family member that behaved this way.
Yeah.
How do we elevate the conversation? How do we elevate it to a higher level, to where we really can start to drive solutions? And I think what's fascinating to me is, you know, I come from this business background as a financial analyst. I'm constantly looking at all these models and seeing where these companies are shifting and what they're messaging. And, you know, probably a couple months ago, Robert Fraley, who's one of the top guys at Monsanto, was on Twitter saying, we're not just GMOs. And I thought, if he's backing off, like if he is publicly
right.
saying, you know, I'm backing off here,
right.
we've got this thing. And you look at the food movement, you look at the big food companies and they're dropping GMOs, and 45% of new product launches are non-GMO, you know? And again, it's like this collective conversation, this collective power is incredible. And I think, you know, food is political on the one hand, you know, it impacts us in every level of our lives every single day. But it's apolitical when it comes to, you know, everybody wants to protect the health of their children and everybody wants to protect the health of the people that they love and their own health.
Right.
And in order to do that, we have to know what we're eating. And I
mm-hmm.
think it's fascinating right now to watch what Monsanto is doing, you know, to watch what the biotech industry is doing. And then also, on the other hand, to watch what the food industry is doing, because right now they are totally doubling down on the hedge, you know, and we see
mm-hmm.
it. And I know that the communities now are starting to say, I don't know what to do because the brands that I loved have now all been bought by these big companies. And I think, Leah, you and I really kind of tend to think the same way here. You know, now is a time for these companies to serve as a compass inside
yeah.
of these bigger entities. And like you said earlier, and I've seen it too, inside these big companies are people that want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And if you can give them that nugget and let them run with it, you know, then I think there's a lot of potential. But again, and I've told some of these companies, you know, you can't pull a fast one, because
right.
if you don't do what you say you're going to do, you will just be absolutely bloodied on social media.
There's a lot of people watching.
And there are a lot
things.
Of people watching.
Yeah. You know, it's important to get the big food companies involved, because they're going to have the most pull with American farmland. And I think, you know, when we were talking before, you know, at ShipCon, you were saying there was less than 1% of the agricultural land is organic. Well, you know, I believe that the big food companies would have more influence in that changing than the little tiny organic food companies, because one, they're looking at as, oh my God, this is my bread and butter. And I think they're going to be able to impact that. And so I am absolutely, you know, very supportive of companies like Annie's, because, you know, as long as they consistently are able to serve, you know, these underserved populations that
mm-hmm.
do shop at Walmart, which do, you know, are part of our readership, if they don't have access to a Whole Foods, you know, a lot of them do not, when they're served. I think that's fantastic. And then the other thing that happens is, you know, the deep green people don't like them anymore, and that's fine, but that's also an opportunity for a really savvy deep green company to sprout up and take that market share away, and it just expands the whole thing. And it watching it happen is just is incredibly fascinating for me. But, you know, I do feel like those big food companies, they do need to start changing, because they are going to have a lot of impact with agriculture.
Yeah. So on that, and we have these group of questions that we ask everyone at the end. Some of these you've already touched on, but we kind of want to do it in a rapid fire way, and you may have some different specific answers as you start to think about that. But I was just thinking about one of the right off launching into the first one is definitely one you've answered, but your quick answers to these. The first one being, what is the greatest obstacle you think you've overcome?
Oh, geez. Biggest obstacle I feel is always myself. Is that what you were saying? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like maybe that would be consistent for everybody, where they get in their own way. And I feel like, you know, coming into the food movement was another part of my ego getting in my own way, and me seeing that this is a lot different than what I initially thought it was, and kind of like me getting in myself. And me losing weight is another example of me getting in my own way, and me losing, you know, all that weight because, you know, it wasn't about me anymore. It was about somebody else. Is that the answer you were looking for?
I love the answer. We weren't looking for one specifically, but I actually, like, you're saying it, and it's, gosh, that's such a great one to think about, where, you know, if we are actually our biggest obstacle, and yeah, I think that's phenomenal. Another, so what do you, and again, I think you were actually just talking about this with the dark green, et cetera, but if you had to pick one, what do you think is the greatest opportunity that you see in this movement?
You know, I feel like social media is the biggest opportunity that we've had in forever, because it gives smaller people that have big voices a bigger platform, an equal platform to the platforms that you have to pay millions and millions of millions of dollars for. It's a platform where I can sit here in my little tiny office in my house, and I can be equal to Monsanto, a big company who spends millions and millions and millions of dollars on their PR. And, you know, I actually had Monsanto call me out the other day when they were recruiting bloggers. They were recruiting bloggers for a pepper campaign that had nothing to do with GMOs. And in the questionnaire that they had them filled out, they literally said, "Are you an avid fan of Momovation?" And they called me out. And it was like an interesting thing, like, okay, 2 cents over here, you know, this is just my time, versus this company that's spending how much on their PR, and I'm a threat to them? Holy moly. So I really feel like social media is the biggest opportunity we've ever had. And also, you know, business, it goes through business to me. You know, at the end of the day, you know, because I've worked in politics, I know that elected officials are not going to stick their neck out for you unless it's their, you know, their thing that they run on. The people have to come before the elected officials will come. And the people are coming through social media, and they're changing the way that they shop. And that is more powerful than any law that you can pass. If you can get the people to make different decisions, everything changes. And I feel like business has been the biggest thing that we've been able to do. All these new companies that are sprouting up, all the ones that you said, the 45% of these new products are all non-GMO, that's the power right there. That's people just making better decisions.
Choices. So that perfectly dovetails into the next one. So what's the one message you would send to Congress?
Oh, I would send, you know, the message I would send is, you know, people are watching what you're doing and they're unhappy. And this is the age of transparency, and it's not the same anymore. You can't operate the same. And, you know, I would just say to them, pay close attention to who your constituents are and what they believe in, because I promise you the special interests are not going to mirror that. And that's what I would say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And within that, and I think you started off this way, but I'll ask the question again. But so who inspires you and why?
Oh, wow. Who inspires me and why? Gosh. Well, of course, I love Robin. I love you, Ashley. You are women in my life that I do look up to, and I draw a lot from. I'm also going to say that the people that inspire me, and this may sound weird, are two people. It's a lot of my family, but not just my family. It's the family that I've lost to cancer is what really inspires me, because that reminds me why I do what I do every day. And then looking into the eyes of my children and seeing the future is another reason to remind me why I do what I do. So that's where my inspiration is really coming from.
Yeah. And that's like so beautiful. And so I'm transitioning now to something that's a little bit silly, but we always have fun getting at the answer. But if you were a food, what would you be?
Oh my gosh.
That's right. We had to switch gears because we're all there. We're all like, I mean, totally.
Oh my God. Let me see here. I'm completely baffled by that, Ashley.
You can actually thank Robin for that one, because there's
Robin.
A dietitian that I could ever think of. But it's really fun when you think of we've gotten some this isn't to intimidate you, it's to give you a little bit of time to think about it, but we've gotten some incredible answers, because everybody always asks what's your favorite food, right?
Right.
And when you actually think about if you were a food, what would you be? It's a totally different story. You know, we've had people have talked about, you know, what survives longer, or what's prettier, or what, you know, like pieces.
You get the ones that are like spicy.
I guess I would be like organic French bread, because I can't eat that much of it. It's so awesome. And I just really love it. I can't think of anything else. All I can think of is when you guys say, what would you be? I'd be like, oh, I want to be a carb so badly.
Totally. I actually love that. I was actually just thinking, like, as you said it, I was thinking of I got this vision of this super sexy, organic French bread, and it's like dry, you know, whatever. And you sit there and you're like, yeah, I could totally see that. I love it. Totally. So we'll conclude with a forward thinking. It's funny when we think about the future, you know, everybody can think, is that 100 years from now? Is that 10 years from now, et cetera? But we've chosen, it's 2050, 50. How does this story play out? Where are we?
Oh, I think we're way off. I believe by that time that we're there, we're going to have a lot more local food. We're going to be back to our roots. I really feel it, deep down in my heart, that the pendulum swings. And our generation right now is taking that pendulum and pushing it back in the other direction. And I feel it's going to go all the way back. And so there's going to be this movement to go back to our roots and back to things that we prior thought that we were outdoing ourselves. So it's like, we're going to take technology, but instead of, you know, harming ourselves with it and making ourselves, you know, killing ourselves with it, I feel like there is going to be a more concerted effort to work with nature as opposed to against it. And I feel that's what the future is going to bring.
Yeah,
as long as we keep working our butts off in social media, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I do. You know, and I think what's happening right now is we're sort of the generation that's saying, stop the damage, stop.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And I've, you know, in the work, and I'm sure you're the same, the work that I've done with these younger generations, like the millennials that are coming up underneath and these 24-year-old kids that are right out of college, it's like we're holding the space, we're stopping the damage, we're holding the space. And that innovation and that unbridled creativity, you know, and that entrepreneurship that's coming out of that generation is so awesome, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think, God, I mean, what some of these kids are doing at 24, imagine what they're going to be doing at 44. And that, to me, is so incredibly inspiring. And again, it sort of speaks to where the conversation started, which is how connected we all are in this movement, despite the fact that we come with so many different skills and so many different capabilities, the importance of everybody's part. So, Leah, you are doing incredible work. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, for sharing the story. We love you too, and thank you for being so brave and with such a huge heart out in the world creating such incredible change.
Thank you, guys. It's my honor to be here.
Thanks for that, ladies. Another wonderful show. Be sure to check out Leah on Twitter at BookieBoo, or check out her BookieBoo network at BookieBoo.com, BookieBoo.com. Right, to next week, we have Dr. Robin Chutkin on the show. Robin's a best-selling author and founder of the Digestive Center for Women. She's also a regular on the Dr. Oz Show. So, until then, see you next time.